Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. The eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-host Tywana Wilson and Lona Small bring you topics related to the laboratory and leadership to help you excel inside and outside of the laboratory. And welcome back for part two of our interview with Ms. Mindy Spiegel, who is the author of the illustrious book, There's a Snake on Your Head, Strategies for Alleviating Fear and Anxiety in the Healthcare System. And we are back to talk to her about her book. Now, if you missed part one, pause this podcast right now and flip right back over to part one. We've linked it in the show notes for you because you'll need to hear all of those tidbits and all of those introductions that Mindy gave about her book as you listen to this. But welcome back, Mindy. Thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me back. I'm excited.
Why don't you give our listeners a quick recap of who you are, why you wrote the book, and a little bit about your book, There's a Snake on Your Head.
I would be delighted to. So I am a nurse. I have over 40 years of experience in nursing. My passion is in creating great experience for patients and families, and recognize that it's so important that the healthcare team has great experience as well, actually first. And so a lot of my work has been around creating great experiences for the healthcare team so that we can create great experiences for our patients and families. And the book is called There's a Snake on Your Head, which refers to the fact that if you're afraid of snakes and there was a snake on your head and people came in to give you information, you're not going to hear anything while there's a snake sitting on top of your head. So that is the analogy to if you're afraid, if you're worried, if you're anxious about something, it's like having a snake on your head and it impacts your ability to hear. Actually, in 2018, we did a research study interviewing patients and families on the inpatient side, outpatient side, ER, asking them what they were afraid of. And more importantly, what's the most important thing we could do to alleviate their fears? And across the board, they said, keep me informed, keep me safe, and keep me comfortable. And so that's really the key to the book is how do we help people feel safe and comfortable so that they can hear the information that we're giving to them.
Thank you so much. And if you go back and listen to part one, we talk so much about why it's so important to recognize the fears that patients might have, to acknowledge those, and then some key tips that you and your teams can take to alleviate those. So not only are we keeping the patient safe, but the patient feels safe while we are doing it, and they have a great experience in our hospital systems. But today I want to talk a little bit more in terms of a deep dive and also look at this from our team perspective. And as a laboratory leader in the laboratory community, this was also very interesting to me because as team members, as employees, associate staff, as laboratorians, phlebotomists, histotechs, whatever you are, we also have snakes on our head. And so why don't you talk a little bit about that as healthcare professionals? How can we also have snakes on our heads just as the patients do?
Thank you. I love that. I love having the opportunity to talk about this. So the research was done with patients and families. And then a very powerful thing happened to me in March of 2020. One of my very favorite nurses, Rachel, looked at me one day and she said, Mindy, I'm so worried I'm going to make a mistake because I can't focus. I can't concentrate. And I looked at her and I said, oh my gosh, Rachel, you have a snake on your head. And I had taught that about patients for so long. She knew exactly what I meant. And she said, you're right, I do. And if you think about March of 2020, people walked in the door. I mean, the staff were afraid. And we said, this is all you have to do to be safe. And the next day, or maybe the next hour, we said, wait, not that. This is what you need to do, right? And it kept changing by the minute as we were learning more. We, a country, we, a world, we're learning more about this pandemic. And Rachel was afraid. She was afraid she would take it to her next patient. She was afraid she would take it home to her family. And while she was afraid, she recognized that she couldn't focus, she couldn't concentrate. Well, fortunately, in my over 40 years career, this was our first pandemic that I've dealt with, and hopefully the only one. But at that moment when Rachel said that, I realized there are many more common times. A lot of the work I had done really had to do with the whole idea that the healthcare team had times they were afraid. You start a new job, you get a new boss, there's significant change in your organization or in your department, and people become a little anxious. And while they're anxious, it's difficult to concentrate. And what do people need? Just like Rachel at the beginning of the pandemic wanted information. She wanted to feel safe. She wanted to feel comfortable. And so does the healthcare team during stressful times in their lives and in their careers.
And this is so important because, like I mentioned in the part one of the podcast, I'm going to keep referring that until you guys go back and listen. But patients, they want to feel safe. And a lot of that comes from communication. But in terms of leaders, a lot of the way also that we can help our teams feel safe, it's communication. And even if you don't know the answer, saying that, you know what, guys, that's a great question. I don't know the answer right now. Or as a health system, we don't know what that will look like right now. Or this is all the information we have right now. And as we get more information, we're going to give you more. And I do remember being a healthcare professional in 2020 and driving to work, and the roads of the city that I live in right now were so empty. There was nobody on the roads. And I'm trying to explain to my young children who were being virtually schooled at the time that to stay safe, everybody needs to stay at home except for mommy. Mommy has to leave the house. Mommy has to leave the house. And trying to do all of the things that you knew at the time would keep yourself and your family safe, and hoping that that was going to be enough, and just trusting, you know, all of the really smart scientists and professionals that were helping us get through that pandemic. But it was actually a very scary time. And I remember working in the laboratory, and all we knew was that communication was the most powerful weapon that we had. To help our team and to help everybody feel, I want to say the camaraderie and feel somewhat normal, because even in the hospital, we were trying to keep our distance. So you really didn't even have normalcy at work. We were wearing masks, which was so different at that time. We were trying to stay as separate as possible, which was so counterintuitive to what we had been taught in terms of how to build a team. And so many things that we've learned, but so many great lessons came from it. And I'm glad that the country has began to move on to this new sense of normal post-pandemic. But as leaders, I just want to ask you a quick question of how can leaders reduce the anxieties of new hires and transitions of leadership and other fears that employees might have?
Yeah, interesting. So I've been doing a lot of speaking on this. I have to break them because it's a little bit different. So for new hires, if you think about what happens, you get a phone call one day and you get offered a job and you're really excited about it. And then oftentimes there's several weeks that go by before you actually start your job, right? And during that period of time, there's silence most of the time, like we don't hear anything. And then that first day comes and you wake up in the morning, and if you think about your last job, I bet you were a little bit anxious and you said, did I make the right decision? Am I going into the right organization? Am I going to feel comfortable there? Are they going to let me be part of the team? How is this going to go for me? And what do we typically do on the first day is we give them all this information. Well, if they don't feel safe and comfortable, then how much are they even hearing on that first day, right? And so are there things that we can do in that two-week gap that are simple? A card that says, Stephanie, we're so excited that you're joining our team and look forward to seeing you, and everybody signs it, right? For leaders to meet with that new associate, preferably the first day, maybe at the end of the first week, maybe at the end of the first month, maybe again at the end of the second month. Most people decide in 90 days if they're staying with you or not. that close contact is so important. Can we give them a buddy that very first day, somebody who really loves their job and loves their organization, to give them that good first impression when they walk into the doors? I always like to say, can we put banners up that says, welcome, Stephanie, to our organization, at least in your department. You don't have to have it at the front door, but welcome into our organization. We're so glad you're here. How do we bring, can we have a potluck for them when they first met? How do we help welcome people so they feel safe and comfortable? And then they can hear all the good orientation information we're giving them, right? New boss, when you get a new leader, I watched over and over again, team results fall when that new leader started. Even really strong teams, even if they didn't like their last leader, the results always fell. Why? Because they were saying, who is this new leader? What do they expect of us? What are they going to change? You know, what's important to them? And the sooner the leader and the team can have those conversations and the staff feels at ease again, then the results would go back up. And so such important conversations to do at the beginning of having a new leader start. And then significant change or change. And one of the things I oftentimes suggest with change is making sure we tell the why. Why are we doing this change? Like connecting with heart, with why are we doing this? What's the important part? And I always say that frontline staff may not have a say in strategy, which is the what's going to happen. But not only oftentimes can they have a say in how do we make this happen, but you're going to make a better decision as a leader if you engage them. Because they may have ideas that you wouldn't think about that are important in their everyday life that's going to help to make this change more successful. And the more they get to have a role in rolling out the change, the more comfortable and safe they feel with the change and they feel like you're valuing them. Knowing at the end, you know, again, starting off with why are we doing this? And there's usually a very good reason. Showing them the results of having doing that afterwards. Did it make processes easier? Did it make outcomes better? Are we getting more results that are accurate? Are we, you know, why is it that we did this in the first place? Is it making a difference? Helps people feel better about the change. And sometimes we just go in and we say, okay, today we're changing, and we forget to make sure that everybody has all the things they need to be successful with the change and that they feel comfortable and safe with it. So, and then recognition. Like, people want to know that the work they do is important. And I think the more we can remind people about that, the more successful we're going to be and the more comfortable they're going to be.
I recall when I first took this job, we walked our onboarding process is as if we were the new employee. And oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to everybody who started before we did that. And it's something that I definitely suggest all leaders do. Look at your onboarding process from the standpoint as if you were the new employee. Oftentimes, sometimes their lockers weren't ready, or for instance, we didn't explain the parking very well, and there's a very unique parking situation at our healthcare system. We may be using acronyms for softwares that are unique to our healthcare system that they may not be aware of, and they're thinking, what is that? What is that? You know, ABC software, or how do I clock in, or how do I check my paycheck? And, you know, all of those things that are immediately important. We skipped right to the technical things, but you know, there are things that are immediately important. What is your schedule? If you have an emergency and you need to call in, how do I do that? How do I submit my direct deposit form, my paycheck? How am I going to get paid? All of these things that are immediately important. And what we didn't realize was, and we thought it was efficient, is you put them in a room with all of these procedures and you say, now read for the rest of the day. And then, you know, as they're doing that, people might walk by and peek in the conference room like they're a zoo animal and say, oh, that's the new person. So rather than doing that, we allow them some time with the team and explain to them, if we knock out a lot of our initial, you know, general competencies and departmental competencies, we get that out of the way today while you're not dedicated to any training. That way tomorrow you can focus solely on the things you need to do your job task. And we explain those things. And so that's definitely a great tip to really look at your onboarding and look at it from the perspective of a new hire and then understand how they might be feeling. Like you said, they have prepared for weeks, days. They got excited. They woke up early that morning so they could find parking and find their way into your health system. And they were excited. And so are you as excited as they are when they arrive? It's great advice.
Yeah. And I love some of the stuff you're doing. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you hand somebody a bunch of procedures to read, my bet is I had that one time. Mm-hmm. I was given a policy manual to read on my first day. I probably remembered the first one, the last one, and anything that had to do with what I was going to be doing immediately.
Right.
So much more effective to learn and then do it and then learn and then do it. As
right.
opposed to, yeah. Love it.
So as leaders, as we're doing these things, as we're doing all of this work to alleviate fears, I'd imagine there's a positive impact, right, on our job satisfaction and our efficiency. Did you find that in your research? And can you talk about that?
Yeah. Now, again, I have to be very transparent here. The research was on patients and families that I'm making this jump. I can also say that having worked in the associate experience leadership development world for so long, remember Rachel's story. She was afraid she'd make a mistake. So alleviating fears, I think, would decrease errors. I think it will increase the staff satisfaction. I think it will increase the patient's satisfaction, right? Because we're not making mistakes and the staff is at their optimum, right? Snakes are going to get in the way of a lot of those things if we just remember Rachel's story. So I do have data that shows that with new leaders transitioning, teams that had workshops with their team and their new leader to help build that connection quickly, the drop in results shortened, that interval that the results had dropped shortened, and they went back up to where they were faster than the teams that didn't do anything when a new leader started. But the rest of that, I'm just extending from the patient's experience and Rachel's story.
And we love on this podcast, myself and my co-host, to give our listeners actionable things that they can do, practical tips, and impactful steps that they can take away and they can click their pen and write something down and they can walk away from this podcast and listening and have something actionable that they can do today when they change their practice. So in your opinion, what are some actionable suggestions that a leader could do to enhance the communication in their team?
Right. Well, I'm really big on huddles because I think it gives you a chance to do really quick information to keep people informed, to take a pulse of how they're doing. And so talk to your team. I don't think you can over communicate today to people. So talk to them, have quick huddles just to say, here are the new things that are happening. How's your day going? What do you need? Quick way to find out if people are missing supplies or things they need to do their jobs. And then one-on-ones. Just as I talked about in the last episode about always know something about your patient that has nothing to do with why they're there. I definitely feel that way about your team members, the people that report to you or people you work with. Always know something about them that has nothing to do with their jobs. When you do, you've built that connection and that relationship with them to help them feel safe and comfortable with you. Engaging them in the make sure they understand the why for things that are happening, especially changes. Again, giving opportunities for recognition and for the team to recognize each other. And those huddles are a really good place for people to start saying thank you to people on their team for having made a difference for them that day, you know, so.
I love that. Mindy, you've got so many years of healthcare experience and you've talked to so many patients, you've talked to so many leaders, you've mentored, I'm sure, so many individuals in healthcare. In your opinion, what is one thing leaders should stop doing today? And what is one thing we should start doing today?
Yeah. And I think some of that may sound a little bit repetitive here, but stop assuming people know why, and help make sure that never underestimate your role in seeing the snake on your team members' heads and recognizing that that can hold them back. And start doing, I think I started with a stop, but start doing, I would just say recognize, it's those one-on-ones and getting to know your people and recognizing them in a way that's important to them, helping them stay connected to their why. Why are they doing the job they're doing right now? Why did they get into it in the first place? And what brings them joy? Because it's very easy to forget your why and your purpose, and staying connected to that, the work you do matters. And I think as leaders, that's a huge piece.
I think as leaders also, we just underestimate the value in our associates and our team members knowing us also. So many people just think that, you know, my job is to delegate and get the task out and get the checklist done. And your team wants to know who you are, and they want to talk to you, and they want, you know, they want you to talk to them, and they want to say hello in the morning, and they want to, you know, they want to get to know who you are, and they want to know you're a person too, you know, and you're not just going to call them into the principal's office, quote unquote, when they've done something wrong, but that you're relatable too, and that you're there as part of the team like them.
Totally. That's why you're such a great leader, Stephanie.
Gosh.
Again, we're going back to, it's all about communication and about connection, right? It's kind of been our theme in these two podcasts, but I feel very strongly about that.
Mm-hmm. Minnie, I'm sure over your career, you have done so much to not only grow other professionals, but to grow yourself. And growth is an intentional thing that we all have to do in our professional development. So I wonder, how do you maintain your growth path? What do you do personally and professionally to continue to grow?
Yes. So very interestingly, I was very comfortable with what I was doing, and suddenly found myself in a new place in my career at this point, 40 some years down the road. Once again, I was in a new place. And had a snake on my head as people said to me, you need to write a book. And I thought, no, I can't write a book. And they'd say, yeah, you have to write a book. And then I wrote the book, Stephanie, and I almost didn't publish it because I said, I don't know how to publish a book. And I didn't. I thought, well, it was fun to write, but I'm not going to publish this book. And I had a snake on my head. And so that snake came off, obviously. The book has been published. And then the person who helped me with my book says, now you need to find a way to get on podcasts. Well, I don't know how to get on podcasts. And so now here I am. I'm on your podcast. And I've had the honor of having been the guest on several people's podcasts that have found me and reached out to me and invited me in. And so that's been amazing. And I have had the opportunity to speak outside of healthcare. So I'm growing and realizing that even though I'm a nurse, you know what? There are snakes in other areas outside of healthcare. So I'm doing that as well. And I'm learning more and more about creating, how do we really looking at associate well-being, and how do we take care of ourselves, and how do we take care of each other and our teams? And so I'm kind of growing in that way. I'm getting more involved nationally. So it's amazing. I thought I'm semi-retired, and yet I'm still growing every day because I'm getting pushed out of my comfort zone into new areas to try to still make a difference, even though I was focusing more on traveling and being a grandmother at the moment. I'm not done. I still have things I want to do.
I know so many professionals that think they retire, and then their profession is like, you're not going anywhere. They get pulled back in. As we wrap up and as we close, this has been such a fun two-part podcast episode, talking to you about your book and yourself and your life and your journey. What is one question that I didn't ask you that you wish I would have?
Yeah. Well, one, I focused a lot, some of the why do we need to know that patients are afraid or that the team is afraid. One of the big things is the fact that they can't think clearly, and we've really addressed that one a lot. One of the other ones, though, is that fear often shows up as anger. Oh. And I think there's a lot of anger today, yeah. Just in general. Mm-hmm. And when somebody comes at us angry, now I'm not speaking aggressively, because that's another whole conversation about what do you do when people are coming at you aggressively. But when you see someone who's just angry, we are wired for to push back or to flee. Mm-hmm. If you think about that person being afraid, pushing back and or fleeing are exactly what they don't need you to do right now. So if they're just upset, not aggressive, but upset, to take a breath and try to see the snake on their head and to say, "Whew, I can see you're really upset right now. What is your biggest worry or concern I can help you with?" And it helps you to override that fight or flight. And perhaps you can help them better if we can stop and see that maybe there's somebody who's afraid.
And it probably helps the person who is afraid also to slow down and take a breath and actually think. Because when you asked that question, I thought about it from the perspective of if I were upset and someone said, "What is it that you're actually afraid of?" I would have to stop and think, like, you know, what am I afraid of? And it would probably calm me down enough to actually have to answer that question.
Yeah. Now, some people won't talk about their fears because that's something we hold really close to our chest. And notice I ask, what is your greatest concern or worry right now that I can help you with? Mm-hmm. When you ask somebody about their, and I would say that, you know, in healthcare, I always say to ask patients and families about their concerns and worries, they're going to tell you their fears. Mm-hmm. But if you ask about their fears, they may go, "I'm not going to share that with you. That's kind of personal." Yeah. If you say, "Whew, what is your greatest concern or worry?" You use the right word that fits into that situation, like, "I don't know, but that I could help you with right now." They'll share their fear with you. They'll say, "Well, I'm really afraid that," you know, whatever it is, you've got it now. So, yeah, I just want to share that piece because I think we see a lot of angry people today. And I think it's also, there's a lot of fear.
Right. Right. That's very good advice. That's very good advice. I have one last question for you, as like I said, as we wrap up this podcast. Name a guest, and this is going to be a tricky one, because I'm going to ask you to name a guest that you'd like to see on our podcast. But the trick is, and the catch is, you have to help me get your answer on this show.
I actually have an amazing colleague. Her name is Anna Marie Dietrichson, and she's the Divisional Vice President of Patient Experience for HCA in Colorado. And this probably is more of the role that I'm thinking of her for y'all, is a certified health coach, and she's passionate about employee well-being. And I think everybody, whatever your role is right now in healthcare, I think people are passionate about employee well-being, and she's a great speaker. And she's got a great accent, so I think you'll enjoy listening to her. So yes, I'd be more than happy to connect you with my colleague, Anna Marie, and I think you'll enjoy her.
Thank you. And listeners, it sounds like we've got ourselves in for a treat.
Yes, you definitely do with her.
So as we wrap up our conversation, I always like to ask my guests, you know, one simple question, and it's what advice would you give to laboratory professionals? Like, you, in the last episode, we talked about the pandemic and all of those things, and we know how difficult it is to be a 4-year degree professional, let alone a professional in healthcare, let alone, you know, a laboratory professional. And so what advice would you give to somebody working in the laboratory right now to help them continue to go on through their career and their pathway?
Yeah. Well, first, I'm actually going to do two things really fast. One is to recognize the times when there's a snake on your head. And we've already kind of talked about that, but take action to not let it hold you back. I almost did. The other thing I want to ask you to do is never forget how important you are to the patients, the families, whether you see them or not, you're incredibly important, and the healthcare team, as your colleagues, as people who report to you. And I ask you every day when you go home at the end of the day, do you beat yourself up all the way home saying, "I wish I had done that better. I wish I had done this better. I wish I had said that instead." And what I'm going to ask you to do is to stop it. And every day when you drive home, here's your homework, or take a bus home or walk home or however you get home. Every day, I want you to ask yourself, you can blame me. You can say, "That person, Mindy, told me I have to do this." How did you make a difference today? Who did you make a difference for? Because every single day, every person listening to this podcast, every day you make a difference in someone's life. And when you stop and think about how the work you did made a difference and who you made a difference for, it refills your cup so you can come back and do it again tomorrow.
Mindy, thank you so much for being on the show. I have enjoyed our talk. I have enjoyed having you as a guest. And I know our listeners got some very valuable information. So thank you for sharing. And thank you for doing the work to writing this book and sharing it with the world.
Thank you so much.
Everybody go out and get Mindy's book. I will link in the show notes her website and her LinkedIn handle and all of the ways that you can purchase her book on Amazon as well as her bio so you can read more about her and connect with her about questions you might have that I didn't ask her in this two-part podcast series. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me, Mindy. And thank you to our listeners today. Thank you for tuning in to the Elaborate Topics podcast. You can always connect with me on my social medias, Instagram, Twitter. You can always connect with myself and my co-host on directimpactbroadcast.com. Be sure to tune in next week for another amazing episode of the Elaborate Topics podcast. And until then, thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.